Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Rob Port, 970 WDAY AM, 93.1 FM. Happy to be with you. If I sound a little funny, I am feeling a little rough. I spent my holiday weekend catching a cold from my daughter.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I'm fighting it a little bit. And we talk radio hosts don't have a lot of it's ditches out here. We don't have a lot of reason to complain about our jobs. What we get to do is pretty stinking awesome. But I'll tell you, it's not easy to broadcast a two-hour radio show when you feel like your throat's on fire. That's not a – this isn't very fun, but we're gonna truck right through it because we're all professionals here at WDAY. By the way, I just got news from Jay Thomas. This will be a lot of fun. Coming up at 3 o'clock, he is going to have a debate about the – legalized ND measure, the recreational marijuana ballot measure. It's going to be at 3 o'clock. Fargo attorney Mark Fries is going to be on. He's been on this program about that measure. He has written a guest post for my blog about that measure. He's going to be, you know, pointing out Mark's not against legalized recreational marijuana, but he sees some real problems with the ballot measure that's going to be voted on in November that we've talked about. Representing the other part is going to be attorney Jordan Parker, who represents the legalized ND. So that's coming up at 3 o'clock on the Jay Thomas Show. You're going to want to stay tuned for that. Coming up on this show at 1 o'clock, the Kavanaugh hearings began in Washington, D.C. Have you watched any of the coverage of this so far, Eric?
No, I've heard news stories that it got off to a rough start.
What an absolute gong show. I mean, I get it. He's a controversial pick. Whether you support him or oppose him, showing up to scream at his hearing, what is the point of that? Like, what are you accomplishing? You're going to show up. You see some of these idiots getting drug out of there?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, just one after another, they'd stand up, they'd scream, scream, literally scream. I'm not, you know, exaggerating. It's what they were doing, like a bunch of angry children screaming at the hearing. But anyway, we're going to talk with Mark Lauder. He's a former advisor to President Trump. We'll talk about the political process around that appointment coming up at 1 o'clock. Plus your phone call, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. And it looks like we may have a call right off the bat here, Eric.
Yeah, Dell is here, and he's got some advice for you and your throat issue.
Oh, great. All right, Dell, I'm happy to hear it, buddy, because what I've done so far has taken almost you.
I got this. I'm a retired teacher, and we had a lot of issues with air quality, and the doctor gave us a recipe called Benadryl, liquid Benadryl, and liquid Maalox, and you mix it 50-50, and you gargle it. And it's called the magic mouthwash. And I can't believe how well it works.
Magic mouthwash. That's what.
Yep. Benadryl, liquid Benadryl. I use cherry, liquid Benadryl, and liquid Maalox. Gargle and spit it out. And a couple times of that, and you should be much better.
You don't swallow it, though. You just gargle it and spit it out.
Right. I mean, you're going to swallow some of it, and that's fine, but you're not, you know, probably don't want to swallow all of it. You don't just,
and this is physician approved.
And it works. And, you know, I came home from Minneapolis with a terrible sore throat, and I got on that and was gone by the next day.
What,
now I got to.
Okay. My solution is to take what is probably an almost illegal quantity of Dayquil, is what I'm running on right now. I'll tell you, the world's feeling a little weird right now. So if we get down some rabbit hole where I start sounding a little weird, that's what's going on.
This really, really works. I'll steak lunch on it.
All right.
I'll put a lunch up. Now, I want to tell you one more thing, though.
Sure.
You know, I don't agree with what you say a lot of the times, most of the time, but I just want you to know that, hey, I care about you, and I want you to get better.
Well, that is very nice. I appreciate that, Del. A very nice sentiment. Doesn't agree with much I want to say, but he wants to make sure my throat is enough in shape to say it. Right?
What else am I going to yell at if I can't hear Rob Port?
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. Anyway,
gotta yell at the radio or something.
Well, that's what I try to do. I mean, you probably know this about me, Eric. I could be a polarizing guy.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And the thing, though, is I'm not trying to make people mad. I'm just sort of organically, I guess. I articulate strong positions on issues. I try my best to back them up with facts and logic and reason. It doesn't mean I'm right all the time, and it doesn't mean you have to agree with me all the time, but I hope what I'm doing here is valuable so that even if you do find yourself disagreeing with me, the show's worthwhile. And I think we accomplish that most of the time because I hear from a lot of people like Dell who, you know, I always get that thing, Eric. People always like to quantify when they're praising me for the show or the columns or the blog or whatever. They always qualify that by saying, well, I don't agree with you all the time, you know. Be a boring world if we all agreed all the time. All right, let's get into some topics here. You know, last week we were talking about this controversy with the First Man movie.
Yeah. Yeah, the flag not being on the moon.
Yeah, or not portraying that portion where the flag. I got a couple of articles here. And honestly, because when I was talking about this last week, the way that the film star Ryan Gosling was characterizing it, this idea that, well, we didn't do it because it's a human achievement, not necessarily just an American achievement, yada, yada. I didn't like that because it was an American achievement. In fact, it was pretty explicitly an act of American nationalism. We got up there. We wanted to beat the Russians to the moon, right? The Russians had beat us into space. We wanted to beat them to the moon. That was a big driving factor behind a lot of it. To ignore that, I think, is to ignore history. Now, if there's anybody, but I think I cautioned, I haven't seen the movie. I think it's going to be good. I'm told the book was good. I want to read the book that it's based on as well. And I think Ryan Gosling's an excellent actor. And I think overall, from the previews and everything, it looks like it's going to be very good. But if there's anybody in the world who is in a position to be critical of First Man, it might be the second man on the moon, Buzz Aldrin, who came out swinging against the movie over the weekend. This from the Daily Mail. Buzz Aldrin appeared to criticize Neil Armstrong's biopic First Man for leaving out the planting of the American flag on the moon. The 88-year-old, who was the second man to set foot on the moon after his late crewmate, tweeted a picture of the flag planted after their landing in 1969. He captured the photo, "Proud to be an American." Aldrin also retweeted a photo of him saluting next to the same picture. So there's that. But here's the thing, though, because I'm reading now, and this, Eric, because I know you were critical of some of the criticism of this. There was an article where the director of the movie, Damien Chazelle, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Chazelle. Chazelle. I don't know how to pronounce that. But anyway, he came out. He gave an interview in the Los Angeles Times. He says there was nothing political. And this makes me feel better about the whole thing. He says there's nothing political about it. He says, quote, "It surprised me because there are so many things that we weren't able to focus on, not only during the lunar EVA, but in the entirety of Apollo 11. Just by the nature of the story we were telling, we just couldn't go into every detail. So our through line became, especially at this part of the movie, where it's the final emotional journey for Neil, that were the private unknown moments of Neil on the moon. The flag was not a private unknown moment for Neil," he continued. "It's a very famous moment, and it wasn't Neil alone. We included the famous descent down the ladder because that's him alone, literally first feeling what it's like to be on the moon. But other than that, we only wanted to focus on the unfamous stuff on the moon. So we didn't go into the phone call with Nixon. We don't go into the scientific experiments. We don't go into reentry." That makes a lot of sense to me, Eric. I feel a lot better, like that was their approach. Because, like, planting the flag, I mean, all that part of the moon landing, that's all well known. Like, we all know that. I think at this point, probably what's interesting, he's right, is sort of the untold story of what it's like to be that man in that iconic moment, not necessarily the iconic moment itself. I feel a lot better about the whole thing. I was worried that there was some attempt, the way Gosling described it, and that's what worried me, is that we're going to attempt this historical revisionism and we're going to, like, de-emphasize the American accomplishment in this. It's just not historically accurate. I mean, you may like the nationalism, you may not like the nationalism, but that's just not It's just it was what it was.
And I do know that there were multiple reports that there are other scenes on the moon where you can see the flag. So it wasn't like they omitted the flag completely from the moon.
It wasn't like they photoshopped it out or like put a different flag in there or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, if that's just that makes me feel a lot. So, you know what I think they do sometimes, though? I think they purposely when we're going around, they manufacture these controversies sometimes.
Oh, sure.
I think it's to generate buzz about this movie because it gets us all talking about. I don't know that we would have talked about this movie on this show were it not for this little bit of controversy.
Yep. You
I do
that.
Think it's.
Go ahead.
Yes. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you see that with other movies, you know, the actors were fighting with each other on set and stuff. And I think whatever
it
will generate buzz.
Right. Yeah. And all the people are like, oh, I'm not going to go see the movie. They're idiots. Most of them probably weren't going to go see it anyway. I've been looking forward to this movie the whole time. I never was not going to go see it. And my only concern about it, again, was just if we're going to portray something like this, let's get it right. And I think we have a duty to get it right, because if you're going to come out and you're going to have a film and the film is based on a historical nonfiction book, and you're going to present it as a non-fictionalized representation of history, then you have an obligation to get it right. And what, you know, the simple fact of the matter is we planted an American flag on the moon and we did it on purpose. It was a message to the Russians and the rest of the world about American supremacy in this area. You know, one that had been diminished, I think a lot of people forget, when the Russians put Sputnik up in the air, the first satellite up there. I mean, that was a huge blow to the American psyche, and this was our strike back at it. So, anyway, that makes me feel better. But I just wanted to touch back on that issue because we got a lot of calls and a lot of feedback on it last week, and I wanted to come back on it. I'm feeling a lot better. I'm looking very forward to seeing this movie. All right, straight ahead, we're going to talk about the Kavanaugh hearings. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff here on the Rob Report, 970 WDAY AM, 93.1 FM. And I'm going to go find. What did he say? It was Maalox mixed with what? I should have written
liquid
it down.
Liquid Benadryl.
Maalox and Benadryl. I hope that's not something. I hope, because Val, he said he doesn't agree with me. I hope that's not some sort of a cocktail that's going to
blow up.
Yeah. I might need to do some research now. I trust Val. All right. We'll be right back after this. The Rob Report. Don't go away. Welcome back. Rob Report, 970 WDAY AM, 93.1 FM, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk. At WDAY.com. By the way, you can tweet me too at Rob Port and follow me on social media if you want. People always ask me, like, they're not sure if they should friend me on Facebook or whatever. Yeah, absolutely, man. Friend me on Facebook. I'll be your friend on Facebook. If you want pictures of my kids interspersed with my political commentary, that's just kind of the way I do things. But yeah. You know, find me on Facebook, be my friend. Eric, you're not my friend on Facebook yet, are you?
I don't think so.
We're going to have to fix that.
Change that right now. I'll friend you and then I'll snooze you for 30 days. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, why not? Okay. What else did I want to hit on? Nike and Colin Kaepernick. Do you see this?
Oh, yeah.
Let me think of that. Colin Kaepernick, of course, we don't know him as the former NFL quarterback who is not a quarterback anymore after he took to protesting by kneeling during the national anthem. Nike selecting Kaepernick for a big payday. And now I'm just realizing I'm not sure if the article that I printed out has the amount of his contract in it. But this is from CNN. Four days before a new NFL season gets underway, Nike is throwing its weight behind one of the most polarizing figures in football in America, former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick. Kaepernick will be one of the faces of Nike's 30th anniversary commemoration of its iconic Just Do It slogan. The campaign will also feature athletes such as Serena Williams, NFL wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr., and Shaquem Griffin, a rookie linebacker for the Seattle. I hope I'm pronouncing this right. A rookie linebacker for the Seattle Seahawks whose left hand was amputated when he was a child. Kaepernick tweeted out a photo from the campaign on Monday over a black and white picture of his face. The caption reads, "Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything." controversial choice. You know, and it's not like I think a lot of people are taking it's not like they're building a campaign around him, right? I mean, it's not in the way that they've maybe done in the past with, like, say, Michael Jordan. He's going to be one figure in a campaign, and to be sure, it's a controversial choice. I mean, I don't know. I don't know that this is going to matter much one way or the other. I don't understand why. I mean, people are getting really worked up about it, and I understand it. Kaepernick, the way he's chosen to express his point of view with the protests has been polarizing. A lot of people think it's disrespectful. I think it's disrespectful. And I think ultimately not really in service of the goal that Kaepernick himself has. I don't think that insofar as when people discuss Colin Kaepernick, I don't think a lot of people are spending much time talking about police brutality or the militarization of the police, the relationship between law enforcement and the public at large, particularly minority communities. I don't know that a lot of that conversation has ensued because of Colin Kaepernick. I think what's happened a lot of Colin Kaepernick is we're talking about, you know, the NFL's policies. We're talking about Donald Trump. We're talking about some of his very stupid decisions to, like, wear a T-shirt with Che Guevara on it and defend Fidel Castro, which I think is a very interesting for somebody who's talking about, you know, police brutality. You want to talk about police brutality, look at the police actions that those men used to institute a communist regime in Cuba, right? I mean, if you're going to take that sort of stance, Colin Kaepernick, you can at least be consistent with it and not, you know, back leftist thugs who, you know, deployed the exact sort of police tactics that you now decry. But that's neither here nor there. I mean, it's, I guess it's a bold move by Nike doing this, but let's, I mean, this is a gigantic multi-billion corporation and they're obviously doing it. I don't think Nike defends, I don't think Nike really has a position on Colin Kaepernick one way or the other. Right? I mean, it's this thing, Nike wants to sell you shoes. That's really it. And they think that by bringing Kaepernick on, it's going to create buzz and it's going to create sympathy among a certain sector. Maybe sympathy under a bunch of progressives who you know, typically like to advocate for worker positions. I saw somebody in National Review write this, by the way. I mean, given the way Nike treats some of its factory workers, I saw somebody write that a progressive wearing the Nike swoosh unironically is like an environmentalist wearing a T-shirt that says Exxon Valdez. I thought that was pretty apt. We're going to go to a break. We'll come right back. What do you think of this Kaepernick thing? I'd love to hear from you. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. No, go away. Welcome back. Rob Report, 970 WDAY AM, 93.1 FM. Struggling to bring you quality talk radio content through a nasty, nasty cold today. I'm really just doing the Lord's work here, Eric. if I could self-aggrandize a little bit.
I guess.
I'm feeling sorry for myself. I really feel like crap. All right. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. I just watch it. I don't watch cable news very often unless there's something kind of breaking news, like, going on. And so I've had the Kavanaugh hearing streaming. What an absolute just indictment of how worthless Congress is right now. I mean, all morning it was a bunch of protests, and not just Congress, the whole spectacle. It was a bunch of idiots in the crowd screaming, trying to disrupt the hearing, because that's where our political discourse has got to, is a group of people who are so fundamentally stupid. They think that if they just show up at the hearing and scream like children, that Kavanaugh won't be appointed to the Supreme Court. It's like when my three-year-old doesn't want to eat his dinner, he feels like if he just screams at me long enough, he won't have to do it. This is the intellectual level that they're operating at. Meanwhile, the idiots that we've elected to office are up on the committee dais. You know, basically, all it's been so far, I don't know that anybody's asked Kavanaugh a question yet. The whole thing has just been all the idiots on the committee giving speeches. There's a bunch of self-serving speeches, standing up. You know, the Democrats talk about how great Kavanaugh is. The Democrats talk about how terrible he is. He's awful. And it's stupid. The whole thing, it's just the politicians talking. We've all heard this. They've all got Twitter accounts, and they send out press releases, and they've all been quoted in the national media, and they've made their appearances on cable television, and they're just reiterating all the stupid stuff they've been saying all along. And meanwhile, Kavanaugh, this guy's job is just to sit there and look stoic while this is all going on. That's his job today, Eric. He's just got to sit there all day while, you know, people, you know, take turns insulting him and praising him and hoping that nobody hits him with a rotten tomato in the back of the head from the audience. This is how our nation is governed right now.
Do you think the people protesting have a right to have access to those thousands of pages of whatever that have not been released?
Well, they were released last night, I think. And I think today, I think they're upset because, you know, obviously you didn't have it was thousands of pages. They didn't have enough time to review it. And yeah, you know, I think so. I don't really know what it's going to change. This guy has been in the public eye for so long. You know, I don't know. I mean, the problem with that is at what point do you cut it off? Now, I would have pushed the hearing back maybe a little bit just to give a little more time. Like, I think doing a document drop the day before the hearing is a little stupid. But that's the Trump administration, I think, because it's obviously the executive branch more so than Congress. I don't know. I wouldn't have done that. But, you know, I don't think the protesters have a right to disrupt the hearing, whatever they're upset about. I don't think you have a First Amendment right to disrupt, you know, what is, I mean, it's a peaceful assembly. I mean, granted, this is obviously a congressional hearing, but it's a peaceful assembly. You don't have a right to disrupt somebody else's peaceful assembly. You just don't. So, no, I don't think they have a right to. Should the Trump administration have gotten those documents out a little bit earlier? I think so. But then there's also, from the Democratic side, what amount of documents is ever going to be enough for a group of people who said that they were going to oppose whoever President Trump nominated before he even named a nominee? Do you think there's ever any level of documentation that's ever going to satisfy them? Probably not. You know, I think it's unfortunate what we've turned this into. I think what this need, what it should be, you know, what Congress's like consent and confirm authority, what that comes from is to make sure that the president doesn't nominate somebody who's grossly incompetent or is you know, compromised in some corrupt way or whatever. Barring that, the person should be confirmed. Right? I mean, is this an ideological process? Absolutely. But that ideology stems from who the electorate put in the White House. Elections have consequences. You elect a Republican president, you're going to get conservative judges appointed by that president. And, you know, Congress's job, the Senate's job, is to confirm those nominees, barring some, you know, evidence of that he's not qualified for the position or he's corrupt or compromised in some way.
How much of President Obama's term was remaining when the seat originally came up? Because I know that that's another thing.
Well, it wasn't this seat. That was the Gorsuch seat prior. Neil Gorsuch already appointed. And I think it was about a year, wasn't it?
And that's when Congress said that they refused to even consider.
Yep. Mitch McConnell refused to even consider President Trump's nominee. Said they're going to wait till after the election, which Republicans won, and they got Neil Gorsuch. He's now sitting on the Supreme Court today. And was that a crappy political move? Yeah. It was also a crappy political move when Harry Reid got rid of the filibuster so that they could block a bunch of George W. Bush's appointees. You know, that sucked as well. Democrats put themselves in this position. I mean, who was it that decided to get rid of the filibuster? Who was it, in fact, that warned Democrats that they were going to rue the day that they got rid of the filibuster for judicial appointments? I believe that was current Republican Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. I mean, this has a long history. I mean, you want to talk about partisanship. It's both parties just escalating one after the other, and neither really has any incentive to disarm. Because at this point, like, if Republicans play it straight, right, and they say, okay, well, you know, we'll allow a filibuster and we'll let President Obama's nominee go through and all this stuff, what guarantee do they have that the Democrats are going to play it straight when they're in power? Right? Because what Democrats did is they got rid of the filibuster so that Republicans couldn't hold. I mean, so that's the problem, is it's been both parties working towards this end, and neither of them, if they want to continue advancing their ball, because waiting for them at home is an electorate that will punish them if they don't get their way. Which is why I think the whole thing just needs to be turned back. Like it or not, President Trump is president, and he gets to appoint who he wants to the Supreme Court. And again, barring some extreme example of somebody being just completely unqualified to hold the position or being corrupt or criminal in some way, they should be confirmed, full stop. And we ought to just stop, because this show trial that they're doing today is ridiculous, and it's an embarrassment. Absolute embarrassment for both parties, for all involved. It's embarrassing. I feel bad. I honestly feel bad. If anything, I got to think any Americans, and let's be honest, Eric, most Americans are not tuned into this.
Right.
Most Americans probably couldn't name you one Supreme Court justice, let alone all of them, or even who's, you know, what's going on today. Most Americans are not paying attention to this. But the ones who are, the engaged who are, I got to think probably are feeling a lot of sympathy for Kavanaugh, who looks like the only sane man in a room full of idiots. Only by dint of the fact that he hasn't been allowed to open his mouth yet. I shouldn't say that. I think Kavanaugh is a good pick. I think he's a smart guy. I think he'll make a fine justice. But there's a circus going on around this guy, and he's just sitting there keeping his mouth shut, watching all the idiots juggle and do trapeze acts and whatever. That's what's going on right now. It is idiocy. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at wday.com. I was going to continue talking about Kaepernick. We got an email from Kurt who says, being unemployed, maybe Nike got Kaepernick on the cheap. Throwing some shade. I was looking, according to CNBC this morning, Nike shares fell a little bit this morning. It was down 2%, which, you know, it's like they're like a $36 billion company, so I think they could probably ride that out. I do think there's something. I think that this is Nike. Nike's got a long time problem with some of their labor force. I mean, I'm hardly like a labor union activist or anything like that, but they pay their assembly line workers about 2.5% of their production costs. I mean, usually when you think of any business endeavor, labor costs are a significant chunk. They're not 2.5%, which tells you how much they're paying their factory workers. They face accusations that their factories don't allow independent inspections of working conditions. Workers frequently faint from heat exhaustion on their assembly lines. They suffer wage theft, forced overtime, restrictions on their use of toilets, exposure to toxic solvents, padlocked exit doors so that people don't escape these horrific working conditions. This is Nike. But I think what Nike's doing by putting Colin Kaepernick in, I think they're buying themselves some goodwill from the political left. I think that's what this is. This is about a multi-billion dollar company trying to buy themselves some goodwill with one specific political faction that is normally prone to being extremely critical of, you know, poor corporate actors like Nike. So I think that what this is about. Colin Kaepernick, I don't think Nike gives a rip about Colin Kaepernick or his dumb protests. I think Nike is making a play here to buy themselves some goodwill. I think that's what this is about.
Got to sell shoes.
Yeah. Yeah, because ultimately that's all they care about. Let's see, another emailer. Brad says, it doesn't matter if Colin Kaepernick was right or wrong. It doesn't make sense to use a divisive person to sell a product. Smells of virtue signaling to me. But I think it does. I think when you're as large as Nike is, and you've got their market share, I think a lot of these straight, you know, sort of supply and demand concepts, they go out the window, right? When you're that big, a lot of that sort of stuff goes out the window. So what Nike can afford to do is they can afford to alienate some people in the short run in exchange for assuaging a different faction of people. Yes, Nike is going to probably make a lot of people angry, but think of the demographic they're angering. Right, it's probably sort of the Republican leaning factions, demographics of the American public. Those are older people who are probably not buying a lot of like Nike athletic shoes or workout clothes. That's not their key demographic. Their key demographic are young Americans who probably tend demographically to lean to the left a little bit. They're gonna, you know, win some people over with that, and also maybe provide themselves some cover on their criticism for in other areas. And now we'll see how it works out for them. Maybe it won't work out for them well at all. You never can tell with these sort of things. But I understand the bet that they're making. And it makes sense. And personally, I just like to get back to people. Just the thing I like about capitalism is that a lot of times capitalism just doesn't care about politics, right?
Sure.
If there's demand, there'll be supply.
Yep.
That's one of the things I love about capitalism. I love capitalism and like oppressed regimes where it's just this. It's like a virus almost. I say that not as a negative connotation, but a positive connotation. Capitalism infects places because people need things, other people have things, and these people come together and they have a mutually voluntary exchange of things, and that's a beautiful, beautiful thing in my mind. I like it. I think when capitalism, some of these companies try to get cute with the politics, I think that's when things go wrong. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is the Rob Report, 970 WDAY AM, 93.1 FM. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Talking about these, the Kavanaugh hearings going on in Washington, D.C., which is just the whole thing's just a joke. I'm reading now on Twitter some tweets coming out from NBC news reporters and other reporters. This here from an NBC reporter. I quote, "Democrats plotted coordinated protest strategy over the holiday weekend and all agreed to disrupt and protest the hearing. Sources tell me," and here she mentions another reporter, Frank Thorpe. This is from NBC News reporter Casey Hunt. "Dem leader Chuck Schumer led a phone call, and committee members are executing now." And there was a point, I watched this before I went on air. There was a point where one of the Republican members of the committee, and I didn't catch who, asked if any members on the committee participated in a call. Dick Durbin, who I believe is the minority chair on the committee, acknowledged that, that many members of the committee sat in on the call. So it doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, it doesn't surprise me at all, Eric, that there was a coordinated attempt, including Democratic members of the committee, to disrupt the hearing. That's just where we are in politics right now.
Yeah, you gotta have a team plan going into whatever sort of a fight they're heading into.
We don't know how to lose gracefully anymore. You know that?
Oh,
like
no.
I think we've lost that ability, because it used to be one important lesson that I heard when I started writing about politics 15 years ago. You don't change many people's minds, right? You just have to sort of accept that going in. Most of your debates with people are going to end with just, we're going to have to agree to disagree. And I think we've just lost that, right? I mean, it used to be, we're in a Democratic moment, right? So like maybe not that long ago, we had, you know, President Barack Obama, we had Democratic majorities in Congress. And I mean, at that point, as much as I don't like it, as much as I don't like their policies or their approach to public policy, at that point, you kind of have to let them govern, right? You make your arguments, you try to persuade. You try to poke holes in their arguments. You maybe use whatever means available to you to try to stop what they're doing. You know, stop their agenda. But at the end of the day, if they're elected, they get to govern. And the same for Republicans right now. Republicans have a majority in Congress. Republicans have the presidency. They get to govern, right? So Democrats could certainly show up to this hearing. They could certainly ask Kavanaugh's pointed questions about his history and his resume. They could certainly express their opposition to his appointment, but at the end of the day, the president gets to appoint. And if Republicans got the votes, they get to confirm. Full stop. You know, and this idea that no, we're just gonna keep going and we're just gonna keep fighting because and this is what worries me, is what it says is the opposition is so evil that we can't just be the loyal opposition anymore. We can't just make our arguments and try to persuade. No, we must block them, like the thing being debated is not the appointment of a perfectly qualified longtime lawyer and judge to the United States Supreme Court. Perfectly qualified, I say, obviously ideologically, he's not everybody's cup of tea, but perfectly qualified. No, instead, we must act like this is, we're voting on whether or not to send people to internment camps. I mean, it is ridiculous how we keep escalating the stakes like this. It's absurd, and I'm afraid. In fact, my Sunday column was about this. I'm afraid it's going to take us to an ugly place in society. We got a caller, Craig. You're on. What's up, buddy?
Yeah, what about those Merrick Garland hearings? Did you have him? Oh, that's right. There weren't any hearings.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I didn't like that either.
Yeah, and and that's what sets
I don't know. I don't know. See, but this is the problem, Craig. Is somebody like you thinks, well, it's okay for Democrats to do this because Republicans did that. It's this tit for tat nonsense. My kids do this, Craig.
Oh no,
my kids literally do the same argument that you're making. It's okay for one of my kids to do something wrong because another one of my kids also did something wrong, and the whole thing's a fallacy. The behavior of Democrats at this hearing today was repugnant and absolutely stupid. And it's not justified by anything Republicans did.
From the enemy of our people, a country that has 6,000 nuclear weapons pointed at us. You steal an election through illegal collusion. You take away.
Yeah, all right. Blah, 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 Craig. I got to go. I got to take a break. This is the Rob Report, 970 WDY AM 93.1 FM. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back. Hour two of the Rob Report, 970 WDY AM 93.1 FM. Happy to be with you. We here to talk about the It's an embarrassment. I think that's happening right now. The Kavanaugh hearing in Washington D.C. And as I'm talking, it's continuing to go on. I'm watching on cable news. It continues into the afternoon. I don't know that there's a lot of content that Americans are getting out of this. I think so far it's Mr. Kavanaugh is sitting there while a bunch of windbags flap their gums and a bunch of children in the audience basically scream and cry. That seems to be what's going on. We are a superpower, and this is how we're governing right now. I think it's embarrassing. Anyway, here to talk with me about it is Mark Lauder, former advisor to President Trump. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Rob?
I'm a little cynical about this process right now, Mark. I don't know if you could tell.
You're not the only one, although I will tell you, I just watched Senator Ben Sasse from Nebraska deliver an absolutely brilliant and epic take on the way government currently is in our country. And it's definitely not, as he referenced, the schoolhouse rock, how a bill becomes a law that we learned as kids.
Yeah. Well, I that doesn't surprise me at all. I like Senator Sasse. I was actually just watching him. I think he's continuing to speak right now. I haven't been able to listen because I have been on air. But, you know, we got news that this was sort of a little bit of intrigue, Mark, is, I mean, obviously we've all seen the news and watched the video and heard the protesters at the event. We've got some reporting as this hearing goes on right now. We've got some reporting from some of the press corps up there that Democrats coordinated that there was a big meeting over the weekend with Democratic leadership members of the committee. And in fact, I think during the committee hearing, Senator Durbin admitted that he and other members of the committee were on the call to coordinate basically attempts to disrupt this hearing, both from members of the committee. We had Senator Kamala Harris at the beginning, trying to move to delay the meeting immediately. And then, of course, the protesters setting off. Have we ever had that before? I mean, has there ever been another example where we had on the record apparent confirmation that members of a Senate committee coordinated with protesters in the audience to disrupt? That seems like something new to me.
It's not something that I've ever heard of before, but really it just shows you what we're seeing almost every day going on in the streets. I mean, the Democrats are really more about just protest and anger and vitriol than they are actually doing their jobs. And let's cut to the chase. I mean, let's remember that nearly half of all Senate Democrats and at least half of the members on the judiciary have already come out and said they're not going to support Brett Kavanaugh. It doesn't matter what these hearings mean. It doesn't matter what documents they supposedly believe are not being released. They've already said they're voting no. So this is really just more of an exercise in them trying to one-up each other for 2020 and to placate their national angry base as they head into the 2020 elections. But what really this is about, and your state is right there in the heart of it, they do not want Heidi Heitkamp or any of the vulnerable Democrats to have to vote on this nomination before the midterms because they cannot win either way.
I think that's a good point, and I think that's absolutely true. And I think I think you're absolutely right. That's what's motivating the Democrats right now. A, they don't want Kavanaugh on the court, or full stop. They'd like to delay this as long as possible. I'm sure if they could, they'd like to delay it until after 2020 and maybe we elect a new president, I don't think that they're going to get their way. But I think you're absolutely right. That being said, is the moral authority Republicans have to criticize tactics like that, is it in place when the White House did a document dump the night before the hearing? Because that was Senator Kamala Harris. She's a Democratic senator from California. And then, of course, Senator Klobuchar, Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota. They called to delay the hearings, and their justification is they're upset because the White House released just last night a bunch of documents on Kavanaugh. Now, I mean, to me, I think a lot of people hear that complaint. They say, well, why weren't the documents released earlier? Why didn't members of the committee, you know, get a little more time to review those documents before they held the committee? Is that not a legitimate complaint?
Well, I think it's important to remember, too, what we're talking about here. And there have already been a half a million documents that have been released. There have been five times more documents released on Judge Kavanaugh than on either of the previous two nominees. It's the most in history. And a lot of the documents that they've already received and released, I mean, one of them was talking about his restaurant preferences from his time back in the Bush administration, or whether memos should be double-spaced or single-spaced. It's just minutiae that they're going through, and they are just using this as a delay tactic. And let's not forget that, you know, flash back to when Elena Kagan and Justice Sotomayor were confirmed, they were telling us when they were in the majority that it was the judicial decisions, their writings, that are the most important gold standard and guide for how a judge would perform on the United States Supreme Court. Now that they're not in power, and now that it is a Republican who's making these appointments, they're trying to find, I mean, they literally sent some of their media top dogs out trying to ask people to send them pictures of him at a national, at a professional baseball game.
Yeah,
they're just doing anything and everything they can. Judge Kavanaugh has written 307 opinions, many of which have been quoted by the United States Supreme Court in their decisions. He has been well-studied, well-versed, and you can even look at the fact that Bill Clinton's personal lawyer from back in the 90s praised Judge Kavanaugh for his qualifications for this role.
There was, and this is kind of interesting, I think you're absolutely right. I think that there is no amount of documentation that is ever going to satisfy the Democrats. They're looking for any excuse to hold things up and delay. So I think if you're arguing that it's difficult to ever satisfy a group of people who are determined on not being satisfied, I think that's absolutely the truth. That being said, why do it the night before the hearing, though? I mean, doesn't that just give them a leg to stand on? I mean, why even do that? I mean, if you're going to release the documents anyway, why time it that way? That just seems needlessly provocative.
Well, and I'm not sure about all of these documents and what they contain or what they don't contain, but I can tell you, as someone who's worked in the executive branch for a long period of time, and many of these documents date back to the George W. Bush administration, so under federal law, they still have guidance over those. But then you also have documents that need to be protected and at least reviewed for the office of the presidency, not just this president, any president, because what you're doing is setting a standard that can later be used to when Congress is seeking other documents. And when we get to a point where a president of either political party cannot get advice from his lawyers or have memos and things written debating pro and con of a decision or arguing what those decisions and the ramifications might mean, then we are going to start doing a disservice to our elected leaders of, again, regardless of party. And that's not something that the White House, not the Trump White House, but the White House as an institution has to be very protective of. We cannot set precedent which could harm a future president years or decades down the road.
Yeah. Somehow for centuries, we were able to appoint people to the Supreme Court without having to worry about what restaurants they liked, or not that Amazon was around back then, but what email confirmations for their Amazon purchases might have been.
I mean, it just seems
a little silly. But as far as, I think what's particularly interesting here, though, is the coordination with the protesters disrupting the hearing. Now, Mark, that worries me from the perspective that, this is obvious, this is an official proceeding, right? I mean, this is the Senate coming together in the process of fulfilling their constitutional obligation to confirm the president's appointees to the federal bench. It's an official proceeding. And so now you have official members of that proceeding inviting in what might fairly be called hooligans to disrupt the proceeding, right, in an attempt to block it. I mean, it's almost like a whole new way. I mean, filibustering was an accepted. It was within the rules. It was a lawful way of delaying inaction of the Senate. But this is a different thing. This is like inviting vandals into the proceeding, basically vandalizing the proceeding, Mark. That scares me. I mean, I don't, and what scares me is because sometimes Republicans emulate these tactics. You know, Democrats do one thing and Republicans do another thing, and it's a tit for tat escalation. I worry about where that path leads, Mark.
And it is very concerning because clearly the Democrats know they cannot stop this nomination. They cannot derail it short of something unexpected happening. So what they have done is they have tried to script this out as a made-for-TV event, forgetting about their constitutional duty. They're more worried about scoring points with their activists who are glued right now to MSNBC and CNN and making sure that they are placating them by keeping the senators and the protesters on the same page. So they know what day we're going to protest what and what questions, and are we going to have a protester stand up and demand this when Senator so-and-so says that. It is all coordinated. It's all a show for television, and it really is disrespecting of the institution of Congress and the United States Senate that they've gotten to this.
It is, and it's unfortunate. And again, I don't have a problem with the senators asking pointed questions of Mr. Kavanaugh. I don't have a problem with them even getting up, even though it's a little obnoxious sometimes, getting up on their stump and making speeches about why he's a terrible pick for the Supreme Court, et cetera, et cetera. Fine. I mean, they're elected to the people. If they feel like that's the best way to represent their constituencies, fine. I'm not going to argue with it. I just have a problem when we're going to invite third parties to come in and disrupt the proceeding in an illegitimate way. I think that's hugely problematic. We got a caller. Ken, you're on. Ken, what's up?
Yeah, you know, they used to try to bork people by digging up some thing in their past. Now they've moved on to dappling people. This is just a dapple. We're going to disrupt. We're going to you know, throw a tantrum, throw a fit, and ultimately the oil flowed, and ultimately Kavanaugh is going to get confirmed.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The next tick is, if the Democrats get control of the Senate, Trump will not get, they will Miguel Estrada, the next one, which is he's never going to get a hearing until there's a new Democratic president. They'll sit short.
That's a really good point, Ken. Thanks for the call. Mark, he's referring, of course, to the protests over the Dakota Access Pipeline. And I guess I see some similarities there, where it's just we have a legal process in place for approving pipelines. We have a legal process in place for approving members of the United States Supreme Court. And in both situations, we had factions of the left say, we're going to try to undermine those processes with extra legal tactics that, you know, again, I think with Dakota Access, it's almost rule by mob instead of rule by law. That's frightening to me.
Well, and that cuts to the fundamental differences of philosophy with Republicans, Democrats, especially as it relates to the president of the United States. And it's kind of what Senator Sass was saying earlier. In the left has done a great job of trying to go to the courts to get things they cannot get done through the regular making legislative process in Congress or even the administrative process. When they disagree with the decision, they're just going to take you to court and see if they can get a judge to overturn it. And that's one of the things why Judge Kavanaugh is so important, because he pushes back on those things. If he does, he believes in the law as it is written. He believes in interpreting the law. He even said it. He's going to say it today in the preview. He believes his role is as an umpire, not to make the rules, but to call the balls and strikes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like all the senators, if they're upset about what the law is, there's something they could do called the legislative process to change that law. Even the United States Constitution is completely changeable. We can make any changes. There's a process in place by which we can amend the Constitution. There is no law in America that, with a sufficient amount of political will, can't be changed under the current system. If the Democrats don't like what the law is, win some elections and change them. We got a caller, Philip. You're on the line. What's up?
Hey, Rob. I was the guy that called you earlier in the week about the monkeying around, and it's a perfect example of what's going on now. I used to teach, taught poli sci and history. primarily social studies. But what I've learned in the process, I was a Ted Cruz fanatic. I'll admit that. And he didn't win, but you notice how classy Ted is. He's been just total class act when Trump did become president. And the thing I've learned over the past 35 years and 22 years in the military is they don't play by gentlemen's rules, shall we say. And I've never played by it, and I'm really warming to Trump. And I realize how just plain destructive he is to the rhinos that I've been disgusted in for years, and the Democrats, how they play. They don't play fair. I don't understand why Republicans play fair. I was a delegate for years in the state, and I quit doing it in 2012. Yeah. And I've been happy ever since. I mean, I watched the process going on. I watched the first 3 hours of the hearing, and I had to get out of the house. I couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, but I've still got a plan, but I got to mute it now,
Phil. By that mob rule, Rob. Yeah. And it's very scary right now in our country. I feel like Dietrich Bonhoeffer in 1928 Germany, where I've been warning people for decades about how liberals are playing by the Alinsky playbook, which I used to require kids to read when I taught. It was the second book I required them to read. And once they understood what it is, you know, I'll let you go now.
Yeah, Phil, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. I think to his larger point about President Trump, Mark, I feel like sometimes President Trump, like there were a lot of these sort of hardball tactics, but a lot of them happened behind the scenes. I feel like President Trump's forced a lot of this out into the sunlight. I feel like if anything, I mean, you want to talk maybe, oh, politics is ugly today and everything else. If anything, I almost kind of feel like it's more honest, though. Like, I feel we're getting a more honest representation of people's motives and their tactics than we ever did before.
And I think that's one of the reasons why people respond to President Trump. So many do. It's because he can take to Twitter, and you know exactly what he feels at any given moment in time. And where you may, many times you may agree or not agree, or may not agree with the way he's saying it. He's just got this very blunt attitude. I'll tell you, I was traveling with him last week. I was on Air Force One. We went to Indiana, my home state, for that big rally on Thursday in Evansville, and you saw 12 to 13,000 people, another few thousand lined up outside that couldn't even watch it. They were watching it on Jumbotrons, and they were captivated by him as he spoke for over an hour off prompter. But he was just telling people what he thought and how he felt and why we could make America great again. And I'm sure there were some in the crowd who disagreed on maybe when he said one thing or another, but generally speaking, they were like, yes, let's get back to this time where freedom reigns, where America's economy is strong, where our country is strong, and where we can take some of the power away from those unelected bureaucrats and the swamp creatures and give it back to the people. And that's kind of what he captures, that spirit. And I'll tell you, he was very excited on the ride, both out there but on the way home as well, because there's so much energy in that crowd. He really had a good time there. And I think people see that he has a good time in doing what he's doing.
Mark, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
All right. Always good to talk to you, Rob.
That's Mark Lauder. This is the Rob Report, 970 WDAY AM 93.1 FM. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Hey, Eric, what would you do? Have you ever seen one of these things? I was just reading an article. It's a Hedinger from North Dakota, a resident from Hedinger, North Dakota, who has chosen to remain anonymous. He won the $25,000 for life prize from the North Dakota lottery, but he opted to take the lump sum payment of $390,000, as opposed to, I think the prize is you get $25,000 a year for the rest of your life. And he opted to take the lump sum payment. It was $390,000 before taxes. What would you do? Would you take the monthly payouts, or would you take the lump sum?
I would do the monthly payouts, not the lump sum, unless I had a lot of bill collectors calling me.
Yeah.
If I needed that money right away, I guess that's the way to go. But otherwise, I would definitely try and spread it out.
I feel like I would take the lump sum. I know that, and I understand this guy chose to be anonymous. I understand why. Not a lot of good things happen to lottery winners. Like, there was a documentary about it not that long ago, about lottery winners falling on hard times after getting all that money. I would choose to be anonymous, and I would take the lump sum. And I think the reason why I take the lump sum, I feel like if I could just pay all the taxes at once, get that money in my hands, I feel like I could invest it and do things with it that would get me a return of investment and beat inflation. That's what I would worry about is inflation, right?
Sure.
Because over the term of my life, 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road, that $25,000 a month is going to be worth less. They're going to be paying you less over time because due to inflation, those dollars lose money. I feel like if I had it, I could invest it. I could do things with it that would be meaningful for my life to offset that. I would take the lump sum payment, I think, if I won the lottery. Now, of course, to win the lottery, I would have to pay the lottery.
Right, right.
And I refuse to play the lottery.
Yep.
Because it's a tax on people who can't do math. All right, I'm going to take a break. This is the Rob Report, 970 WDAY AM, 93.1 FM. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Little Creedence Clearwater Revival on a Monday afternoon. You a Creedence fan, Eric?
Oh, yeah.
I once saw Creedence Clearwater Revival in concert. Or at least it was a band. I think there was at least one member of Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Would that be the revisited version?
I think it was the revisited.
Yeah.
Although I think there were a couple of them with, like, competing band members had formed there. Anyway, I don't know. It's good music. I like that. Let's see. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. I wanted to respond. There was a letter to the editor over the weekend that accused me, along with Congressman Kevin Cramer, of resorting to thug tactics in our commentary, which I guess I got lumped in with the Cramer campaign, but it's from a woman by the name of Mary Rennick. And Mary, I was critical of her. I wrote a post about it. I talked about it here on the show. I was critical of her. She was the one who went to the Cramer campaign press event and tried to get in. Cramer campaign wouldn't let her in. So then she subsequently ran to the North Dakota Democratic Party and told her story, ran to Senator Heidi Heitkamp's brother and told her story on his radio show. And then the Heitkamp campaign sent out a press release about it. Basically, I mean, I watched all that unfold. My take on it was, it looked like a coordinated effort by a political operative to manufacture a negative news story for Congressman Cramer. Senator Heitkamp's campaign is investing heavily in this these attacks on the pre-existing conditions front, which we're going to get to here in a moment. I want to get a little bit more to say about that. And I think Rennick was a part of the strategy. Now, she claims in her letter to the editor that she was not a part of it. She calls my response pure thuggery. She says, I quote, Port and Cramer are lying and saying I was sent by the Heitkamp campaign to disrupt their press conference. That couldn't be further from the truth. Port maligned my character and lied about me in a blog post picked up by Forum Communications. He doesn't know me or anything I have been through. For the Forum to run this story is deeply irresponsible journalism and borders on libel. Now, the problem here is Mary Rennick, as she complains, not mentioned anywhere in her letter, is the fact that she's been appearing in anti-Cramer television ads run by Priorities USA, which is a Hillary Clinton-aligned super PAC that is busy trying to get Heidi Heitkamp reelected. Mary Rennick is a member of the North Dakota Democratic Party. She has been a delegate to their state convention. She has appeared frequently in the past in press releases from Senator Heidi Heitkamp's office. And when, you know, she wanted to make a stink about this press conference thing, she says that she went to the Democratic Party just to get her story out there. Eric, I think if it's just an average member of the public has something happen to them with their congressman and they want to get the story out about it, do they contact the Democratic Party or do they contact, I don't know, the news media who might be happy to tell a story like that?
Yeah, you know, I think the news media would be probably the first place I would go.
Yeah, no, she went to the North Dakota Democratic Party and then went on the Senator Brothers radio show. Now, I don't think it's unfair to me to look at that and say, you know what, her motivations for showing up at that press conference might not be as purely driven by, you know, civic involvement or civic engagement as she's saying. Now, if Eric, if the opposite happened and somebody who had been appearing in attack ads attacking Senator Heitkamp showed up at one of her press conferences and demanded to be let in, and her campaign didn't let him in, do you think that might be understandable? That maybe they don't want, you know, a political operative to come in and disrupt or try to create a YouTube moment? I get that.
Sure.
I mean, so much of politics is devolved down into these little food fights. And I don't think any of us have any obligation for people who aren't there you know, to ask a legitimate question. People who aren't there for a legitimate intent. If you're just there as an operative to try to create like a YouTube moment with the congressman, well, okay, fine. His campaign didn't let you in. Tough noogies. If you got questions to ask the congressman, he's available at plenty of events. He's available on this radio program every week. He'll be on tomorrow, 1:30 p.m. You can call in, ask him all the questions. Eric, you can attest, we don't screen those questions.
No, we don't.
When the people call in, I have no idea what they're going to ask. Now, we might, if you start cursing at the congressman, we're going to dump you. But, you know, if you call in, you ask a zinger, you ask a tough question, whatever, you get to ask. We don't screen those calls. So, you know, that is unfortunate. The idea, Mary Renick is a political operative. I don't know, you know, whose idea it was for her to show up at the event. But I could tell you, it sure looks coordinated to me. Given what happened, she showed up, she wasn't allowed in, she went to the North Dakota Democratic Party to tell her story, she went to the senator's brother to tell her story, the senator's campaign sent out a press release about her talking to the senator's brother, and all the while, meanwhile, she's appearing in attack ads attacking Kevin Cramer. This is a non-story, and it's not thuggish to point any of that stuff out. And by the way, speaking about this claim about pre-existing conditions, I was just looking over the break. Facebook, Eric, has a they have a political database now. Part of their effort to combat, you know, during the 2016 election, we learned that, like, I guess Russian operatives had purchased Facebook ads or running Facebook ads or whatever. So they have a database now where you can go on Facebook and you can look up who's running ads. You can put in keyword searches and see the ads that are being run on a particular topic and who's paying for them and how much they're paying for them and everything else. It's a degree of transparency in political advertising on Facebook. So I've been monitoring that during the campaign. And I was just seeing that the HeitKamp campaign is making some big ad buys on Facebook. And they started on September 1st. I just found them today. But these ad buys are running ads making the claim that Congressman Cramer wants to remove, I'm quoting now specifically from the ad, is removing, here's what the ad says, removing protections for 300,000 North Dakotans, that's a question, Kevin Cramer's health plan is wrong for North Dakota. So basically they're accusing Congressman Cramer of supporting a health care plan that would remove protections for 300,000 North Dakotans. Now the problem with that claim is it's been fact-checked at least four times, and found to be wanting. For one thing, on this program, we had North Dakota Insurance Commissioner John Gottfried. He called that claim irresponsible at best. He points out that about 80% of North Dakotans, over 80% of North Dakotans, get their health insurance through an employer or through the government, and thus wouldn't be affected by any changes to Obamacare in terms of pre-existing conditions. Those plans through your employer, those plans through the government, covered pre-existing conditions prior to Obamacare. Nothing would change about that. Oh, by the way, there's still about 8% of North Dakotans who are uninsured. Despite Obamacare supposedly improving that situation, it didn't improve that situation, 8% of North Dakotans are uninsured. Also, wouldn't be thus affected by any changes to pre-existing conditions. So you're talking about, you know, about 90% of North Dakotans not affected. Now, they're saying 300,000 North Dakotans. That's like 40% of the state. He says that's claims irresponsible at best. Now, of course, Insurance Commissioner John Gottfried, he's a Republican, he's a politician, maybe not the best source for rebuttals, you know, dispassionate rebuttals to Senator Heitkamp's campaign claims. Fine. So how about the Associated Press? Here's what the Associated Press had to say about Senator Heitkamp's campaign claim. They said, I quote, the number of those people who might have had problems getting health insurance before the federal overhaul and who would have had trouble if it were to be repealed is far smaller. That's because most of the state's residents are insured through their employer or the government. How about PolitiFact? This is what they said about Senator Heitkamp's claim. I quote, the number of those people who might have had problems getting health insurance before the, or excuse me, I'm reading the Associated Press one again. This is from PolitiFact. Only about a tenth of the 300,000 people in the ad would be directly affected by the laws in question. Only about a tenth. Now, what I thought of was interesting about PolitiFact, they rated Senator Heitkamp's ad as half true. But I feel like if she is making a claim and only about a tenth of that claim is true, it's not half true. It's one-tenth true, PolitiFact. We could fact-check PolitiFact a little bit. Newsy, right? Syndicated news organization Newsy also did their own fact-check. Here's what they wrote under the headline that says the Heitkamp's claim, quote, isn't accurate. They wrote, even if the Affordable Care Act were repealed or replaced, the number of people who would lose coverage is far smaller, only including people who aren't part of a group plan, like through an employer. In other words, all of these fact-checking services are saying the exact same thing that Insurance Commissioner John Gottfried said, which is that they are exaggerating the number. Now, these fact checks have all happened over the course of weeks. Insurance Commissioner John Gottfried has been making this claim, saying that these claims about pre-existing conditions is exaggerated. In fact, the Congressman Kevin Cramer's campaign has actually asked Senator Heitkamp to take down that ad. Denise, right, it's got the woman Denise in it, talking about how she has a pre-existing condition, and she says Heidi would never vote to repeal coverage for her pre-existing condition. They asked them to take that ad down because it makes that $300,000 it makes that claim about 300,000 pre-existing conditions that, you know, not only our insurance commissioner, but three different news services, right? I don't think the Associated Press is some bastion of right-wing bias. I don't think PolitiFact is some, you know, conservative, think tank. I mean, these are news organizations, and they've all found this claim to be wanting, and yet who is doubling down on them? Who is now not only continuing to run that Denise ad, which is inaccurate, but now is going to put thousands and thousands of dollars behind digital ads, making the same claim that is false? It's the Heitkamp campaign. Now, in the Trump era, he puts out a lot of rhetoric about fake news, right? And a lot of times it's self-serving. The fake news is a lot of times imagined. It's not so much fake news. It's just news that's inconvenient for President Trump. So he labels it fake news. Sometimes it really is fake news, too, because the news media is not perfect either. And so with all that fake news, we've seen a rise in these fact-checking services, right? And we're seeing that, you know, platforms like Facebook and Twitter and Google, they're trying to start to incorporate some of these fact checks to give a rebuttal so that people out there making wild claims that might not be that accurate, there's another source. Now, we could talk about that and whether or not that's advised or whether or not the fact checkers themselves don't have their own problems with bias or whatever. But in this instance, I think the three fact checkers got it right. You have three different services all reaching the same conclusions. Senator Heitkamp is exaggerating this claim. But yet it doesn't matter. Despite the fact that the Associated Press has fact-checked this, despite the fact that PolitiFact has fact-checked this, despite the fact that Newsy has fact-checked this, despite the fact that our insurance commissioner has fact-checked this, Senator Heitkamp is just going to bull ahead making the exaggerated claim because she can. And she thinks that you voters are stupid. She thinks that she could just continue to make this exaggerated claim and you're all going to swallow it because you're stupid and you're not really paying attention. And you're just going to swallow whatever she puts out there. You got to decide for yourselves, folks. This is why fact checkers can't do the job for you. You got to do the work yourselves. You got to decide for yourselves because it doesn't matter. These politicians, they're shameless. More to come straight ahead. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back. Rob Report, 970 WDAY AM 93.1 FM. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. Let's see. Emailer says, you forgot to whine about this one, Port, and links to... Oh, it's a guy. He's linking to his own letter to the editor. Huh. I hadn't even read that letter. Well, I think that's a power move, right? They email it. You didn't complain about my letter yet, Port.
Nothing wrong with promoting yourself.
I guess not. Well, and listen, I've done more than my fair share of, it's a compliment when my critics want to make sure they get on the show. Right?
Like, that's true.
We'd really like you to notice that we were critical of you, so you will talk about me and give me attention, Port. I guess it's about the transgender thing. Oh, I wrote, he's upset that I wrote about the column with gender identities at the Democratic National, where they got a thing where they got to have gender. They're simultaneously, they got to have gender parity in their committees, the Democratic National Committee, in their various, you know, policy committees or whatever. They got to have gender equity, but they've also recognized that gender is fluid and people can just, it's whatever you identify as. And I pointed out the absurdity of trying to implement identity politics when identity is fluid, right? I mean, in a different context, it's like saying, well, anybody who says they're a black man is a black man. And also, by the way, half of our committees all have to have black men on it, right? So I guess a bunch of white dudes can just say, well, I'm a black man and serve on the committee. I mean, I'm just trying to illustrate the absurdity. The letter writer says that if Port were aware of the danger to the point of murder, of those who don't fit Port's binary brain encounter, He might not find the diversity of sexuality and gender expression so humorous, but I doubt it. I just think it's an absurdity. It is an absurd concept, the idea that your skin color or your gender or something is your defining trait for the purposes of politics. It should control how you vote and how you see the world. I think is ridiculous. I think black men can be Republicans, gay men can be, lesbians can be Republicans. You are an individual. You are allowed to see the world how you want to see it, and your sexuality doesn't really matter. It's a part of you, and maybe it adds up to why you believe certain political things, but it shouldn't define you. You're bigger than that. You are an individual. You're not a member of some group. That's my point. Identity politics are absurd. Another emailer, Chris, says, your caller, Ken, raised the point about dappling. One of the frightening things is how valuable DAPL and similar events are to the extreme left narratives. If you listen to their podcasts and college radio programs, they speak about it as though it were the Trail of Tears. Yeah, I mean, there's really, I think, an effort to turn the protests against the Dakota Access Pipeline, even when they were going on, to turn them into something that they were not. What it was a bunch of extremist thugs who came down, trespassed on property, used vandalism and violence to try to stop a lawful process building a pipeline. And now they're trying to turn it into this like civil rights moment. I think they'd like to believe it's some like modern Selma march or something, because that's what they do. Fundamentally, their argument is very stupid. They're arguing against oil, which everybody, including themselves, use. They want to leave it in the ground, but that's a very stupid argument. Not a lot of people are going to buy into that argument. So instead, they got to cloak it in all this other stuff. And the emailer's right. It's dangerous. Eric, you know what my favorite picture of the Dakota Access Pipeline protest was?
I'm guessing all the garbage left behind.
No, that made me sad.
Okay.
My favorite picture, it was a couple of the dirty hippies who were at the protest, were at some gas station. I think it was in Belfield. A reader sent this to me at the time. And they were in an SUV, like it looked like a little Ford Explorer or something. And written on the back window was "Oil Kills." Right?
Mm-hmm.
Standing in front of the vehicle was "Need money for gas."
Yep. I remember that photo.
Oil kills, except when you need some gas to get to the protest, I guess. All right, that's it for me. Hey, Jay Thomas Show coming up. He's going to have a debate at 3 o'clock about Measure 3, the recreational marijuana ballot measure. You're going to want to tune in for that. You can catch me here 12 to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday on 970 WDOI AM 93.1 FM 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at sayanythingblog.com. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again.